Blog Talk Radio.
The People You Need to Know on Radio. I'm your host, Sparkplug, publisher of People You Need to Know, Metro Atlanta's premier business spotlight publication, where we promote business people you can call today. For more information, log on to sparkplugpeople.com and discover even more people you need to know. The sponsor of today's program is Kissable, the new health and taste sensation in toothpaste, developed by Dr. Danielle Wilson, president of Premier Dental in Dunwoody, Georgia. Give her a call today for a smile makeover at 770-642-4711. My first guest today really needs no introduction. He is a celebrated attorney in the Metro Atlanta area and has been practicing law for more than 34 years. Our guest has been a loyal client of People You Need to Know for more than a decade. His work has earned him the Martindale Hubbell AV rating, the highest rating offered by a nationally recognized law directory. We are honored and humbled to welcome to the show Attorney Donald P. Edwards. Attorney Edwards, how are you today, sir?
I'm doing wonderful, Sparkplug. Let me just congratulate you for what you are doing, exposing our community to our professionals and doing it in such a wonderful and energetic way. It's really a blessing.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Well, first and foremost, I'd like to thank you from the bottom of my heart for your years of dedicated service to the community.
Well, thank you.
You were born in Buffalo, New York. How often do you get a chance to go back there to visit?
Buffalo is my hometown. I'm always rooting for the Bills. I still can't get over that field goal against the Giants. But I get back there at least once or twice a year because I enjoy, you know, being back with family that are still there, at least my sister and her husband, and I've got some aunts and a couple of cousins still living in Buffalo. I'm kind of a nostalgic type of person. I enjoy the feeling of nostalgia. Many times when I go, I enjoy worshiping in my home church, and I enjoy going, driving back to the neighborhood and stopping by. At least one of my friends that I grew up with that still lives on the same street, and as well as to show, you know, my children and my wife where I grew up. And things have changed, of course, in the passage of time, but I still enjoy my hometown. I'm still a root for all that is Buffalo.
Well, you have one older sister you mentioned, and who is a retired elementary school teacher. What is your fondest memory of her?
We were 5 years apart. She's a little older than me, and you know, we had a family that was loving and close-knit, and whenever we all had vacations together and did things together, and of course, Buffalo is known for its snow, so many times we would just have snow fights, snowball fights. She would throw like a girl and always miss me. We just had a lot of fun in Buffalo.
Well, you were raised by two loving parents. What was the greatest lesson they tried to teach you?
When you see the situation now where so many of our children grow up without the benefit of two loving parents, it saddens me. We were fortunate to have parents. My father was a postal worker. My mother was a cosmetologist, did her work with hair and enjoyed it. And my father was one who worked his way up to being the top African-American postal manager in outside of New York City in the state. What they told me is to do the right thing, to be honest. All those good traits that they had, you know, to be thankful for what you have and to be open and receptive to giving and sharing. And they gave me a good appreciation for the outdoors. My dad liked to fish. We were on, of course, Lake Erie. Buffalo is accessible to the lake and Niagara River. So we enjoyed fishing, and I just enjoyed being a part of a loving family that, looking back at it, is really a privilege.
Well, you wrote that the movie On the Waterfront inspired you early in life. What was it about this movie that was so inspirational for you?
My uncle was a projectionist at a theater. By some way, he had a 16-millimeter projector that he used and had the film on 16-millimeter, and the whole family, I guess the Edwardses and the other relatives, just sat around and remember being laying on the floor just watching this powerful movie. I guess I was around 10 years old at the time. Of course, the movie was a famed movie, multiple Academy Award winner. The whole theme of the film was to stand up for what is right and to do the right thing. And, of course, those listeners who are familiar with the movie know how impactful the scenes are and the language and the dialogue that leads Terry Molloy, the character played by Marlon Brando, to do the right thing and turn in Johnny Friendly, the mobster and the controller of the docks. I would encourage our generation, our newer generation, younger generation, to go to Blockbusters or the video store and check out On the Waterfront.
Well, as a kid, you were good at putting up an argument. When did you first realize this, and who told you that this ability could serve you well in the courtroom as an attorney one day?
Well, I think that started around the dinner table. We'd always eat together, and we would always discuss some issues of one sort or another, and I always took the right position, even if I was wrong, and I was politely argumentative. So somewhere in that process, the seeds were sown that perhaps being a lawyer came to be seeded in me. That's an opportunity to have a position and to make an argument to persuade others to agree with your position, which is basically what you seek to do, at least as a trial lawyer, which is what I am.
Well, you wrote that your favorite subjects in school were biology and art. Why were they so appealing to you?
The art thing was in elementary school. I guess when you're in elementary school, you don't know exactly what you're good at, what you want to do. Of course, you did have plenty of time to get settled with that. I always liked to draw, and I thought I was pretty good at it until there was a sixth grader. I was in eighth grade at the time. Sixth grader displayed his work, and it was so much better than mine, I just got discouraged. Now, biology is a high school. I took advanced placement biology and thought at one time I may even go into medicine, because I thought, you know, the noble profession of healing people would be something that I would be interested in. But despite my fondness of biology, I don't think I could really kind of put up with flowing blood, dead bodies, and pain, which is something that all doctors, you know, get themselves in. So I bended more towards the humanities in my high school and college career. I didn't take anything but basic sciences in college. So it was during my years at Morehouse College that pointed me towards the humanities and ultimately leading me into a desire to go to law school, and which I did.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that here in just a few minutes, or a few seconds, I should say. But going back to high school, you were also involved in student government. What did you do?
I was the freshman representative of our high school, which was a very large urban high school, very diverse then, not so now. And just as my neighborhood, I grew up in a very diverse neighborhood in Buffalo back in the 40s and the 50s and 60s, with people from all over the country, all the world, actually, finding neighborhoods where blacks and whites and Italians and Polish and Swedes and everybody else, we all kind of live together. It's a sadness that you don't find those types of neighborhoods, or at least they're very rare now. I just felt comfortable in leadership positions.
Okay.
I was a good follower, too. And student government was one of the activities that I enjoyed.
Okay. In high school, you thought the teachers gave you a hard time.
It really, it wasn't so much in the high school. It was more in elementary school, I think. whether it was deserved or not, I don't know, but I'm glad I've kind of matured out of whatever it was that sometimes would antagonize the teacher. But I learned that to appreciate, you know, what teachers had to do, and still very much appreciate the role of educators in our society. And unfortunately, the rankings that they get in terms of both prestige and honoring, and as well, of course, the remuneration that educators do, given the importance. Everybody has been taught. There's no doctor, there's no lawyer, there's no teacher that has not been taught by a teacher and has been elevated and encouraged, in most cases, to do better. So as you grow up, you get more mature and you learn to understand the rules and appreciate the rules and appreciate the rules, the givers. So, but I eventually overcame whatever activities that would upset one teacher or another.
Well, after graduation, you attended the University of Buffalo, but after your freshman year, you transferred to Morehouse College in Atlanta, Georgia, where you graduated with honors. How did you find out about Morehouse?
There were in Buffalo a cadre of black leadership, and many of whom were Morehouse graduates. So it was through, you know, recruitment of on behalf of these men who, you know, recognized that there were some young people in their community that they knew and wanted to direct towards Morehouse. So back in Buffalo, we met with many of the alumni while I was in high school, and we learned more about Morehouse. And there was a financial thing for the first year. Then I kind of built up my finances after the first year and transferred to Morehouse at a very interesting time in 1967.
What does Morehouse mean to you today?
Well, Morehouse means the same. It means an opportunity that is rare in our world, where black men in particular can assemble and study and learn from each other and be in an environment where black male leadership is nourished and treasured. And wherever you come from, whether it's from a small farm town or a large city, you can get to know each other and learn from each other and share different experiences. It's also a magnet because of its uniqueness as really the only male undergraduate college for African-American males to bring in people who, like when I was there, people like Howard Thurman and so many others that were just so inspirational and so motivating. I was there during Dr. Mays' last year as president and during the 100th year of the school. So there was a lot going on my first year at Morehouse. And I'm still very much a supporter of Morehouse and what it seeks to achieve, which is the creation of leaders and people that can help our people through a lot of difficult situations that present day presents.
Well, after Morehouse, you went to Boston University Law School.
Yep.
Why Boston University?
I had never been to New England was one of the reasons. So the idea of going to Massachusetts was intriguing to me. Another reason was financial. My first marriage, I got married in my junior year at Morehouse, and I had a baby, a youngster, of course. This presented a very challenging situation for me financially, and fortunately, Boston University was able to assist through scholarships and through employment, where my wife was employed as a dorm mother. So for the 3 years that I was at Boston University, I was a dorm father for a group of women.
Well, I read that, speaking of babies, I read that having your first and second child were major turning points in your life. How has having children changed the way you view the world?
Oh, that's a good question, Spark, because there's very few life-changing experiences that compare to having a child or children. And your life, whereas, you know, you can kind of pick up and go on vacations on your own and you're at your own schedule, now your world circles around your children and their activities, which is a joy in itself. So for me, having in my second marriage and after 12 years of marriage, having a daughter and then 5 years later having another daughter, just was just a blessing and remains a continuing blessing just to see them grow and to learn and to appreciate all that they're doing as youngsters. So now our vacations are Disney cruises and vacations where we can just enjoy giving them opportunities that we didn't have or couldn't afford as youngsters.
Well, on a sadder note, you told me the other night that the lowest point in your life was struggling with the death of your father. How did that loss affect you?
My father was such a wonderful man that his loss in particular just created a vacuum. We were in the process of bringing my father from Buffalo to live with us. We had prepared a place for him, a room for him in our lower level, and just live out his remaining years with us. And we were very much looking forward to it. And my father was such an independent man. He didn't want to leave his car in Buffalo. I had to fly up to Buffalo, and then I drove him back from Buffalo to Atlanta. And somewhere along that trip, my father became ill. As soon as we pulled into the driveway, my father was too ill to get out of the car, and we just took him right on to the Southwest Hospital, and where he remained for another, I guess, month before he passed away. So that disappointment, whereas we were looking so much for him to be with us, you know, kind of turned into a very profound sadness in his death through cancer.
Well, on a lighter note, you also told me the other night at the photo shoot that the happiest moment in your life was when you found out that your wife was pregnant.
Yeah.
What did this pregnancy mean to you and your wife, Jo?
I still remember the moment when she showed me the, you know, those little sticks, dipsticks, pregnancy tests.
Mm-hmm.
She kept it. I think she still has it for both children. You know, she was so much interested in having a child, and I was also in tune, maybe not at the same level that she was, but to share her joy and basically to watch my wife just bloom with happiness during her pregnancy and then the actual birth of the child, and then now watching her grow into a wonderful teenager is just a wonderful experience. As I said before, it was a life-changing experience, but it was all for the good to see this happen, to see this miracle of birth, and to see how life continues to evolve. Our second child, Damia, was named by her sister. We were discussing names, and my first child, Nia, she was about four and a half at the time, and she came up with the name Damia, trying to look at words with the D-O-N in it, but she came up with D-O-M-I-A, Damia. And we asked her just, what does that mean? Because we were trying to find meaning in names. And she said it means leader of people. So one of the bonds of our daughters is that our eldest daughter named her sister, and I think that creates a very extra special connection between the two.
Well, Attorney Edwards, we only have about 5 minutes left, so we already talked about the fact that you've been an attorney here in the metro Atlanta area for 34 years. When did you first want to become an attorney?
I think it was in Morehouse. I don't want to be in public relations or some of the personnel involved in corporations. That just didn't appeal to me. And I still felt that I wanted to continue studying. And Morehouse, as you may know, directs a lot of its students to professions like medicine and the law, as well as business. I didn't want to be in business. I already told you that in medicine, one, I wasn't good in math and didn't like flowing blood. So that left me with being attorney and the desire to make change. When I looked about my community, looked about the country, when I saw change, and this was during a lot of change happening in the country during the late 60s, lawyers were a part of that, and I wanted to be a part of that.
So what exactly do you do at the law office of Donald P. Edwards?
Well, my legal work now involves it mostly in personal injury, wrongful death. I represent people who have been injured by vaccines. There's a lot more of that then people realize that vaccinations can cause some very adverse injuries. That's a practice that I've developed over the past 5 or 6 years. But it's mostly the automobile injury, the person who is hurt or injured by someone else's negligence. That's where my primary focus of my practice is, and that's to really help those recover due compensation after suffering a significant disabling injury.
So in our final 2 minutes that we have left, what do you want people to know about the Law Office of Donald B. Edwards?
Well, I want them to know about the Law Office of Donald P. Edwards, that I'm here, that me and my staff, we take personal attention to our clients. We commit ourselves to our clients, that we are accessible and, you know, we'll work with them to achieve a just result.
Speaking of accessibility, how can you be reached?
My website is very easy to get to. It's DonaldPEdwards.com, and that provides a lot of information about, you know, me growing up and some of the honors and that I have been privileged to receive throughout my career.
What about a phone number?
Phone number is 404-526-8866. I'm on 170 Mitchell Street. My building is 170 Mitchell Street, there between Broad and Peachtree. Stone's throw from the courthouse, and accessible by MARTA, and we have free parking in my parking lot.
Well, Attorney Donald P. Edwards, I'd like to say thank you for being with us today.
Well, Spark Prog, thank you, and you keep your energy up and continue to do the good work that you're doing and letting our community in particular know who and where and what we do.
All right. Well, we'll be right back right now. We have to take a break, and we'll be right back after these messages with more people you need to know.
Today's program is sponsored by Kissable, the new health and taste sensation in toothpaste developed by Dr. Danielle Wilson, president of Premier Dental in Dunway. For more information about Kissable, log on to bekissable.com. That's bekissable.com. And if you need a smile makeover, call Dr. Wilson today, 770-642-4711.
Listen to People You Need to Know with your host, Spark Plug, Saturdays from 1 to 2 p.m. on WGUN 1010 AM.
People you need to know. It's time for people you need to know. It's time for people you need to know on the radio. People you need to know. It's time for people you need to know. It's time for people you
Welcome back to People You Need to Know on Radio. I'm your host, Spark Plug. Our second guest today is the president and medical director of Opulence Aesthetic Medicine. She has been featured on CBS Radio, Atlanta & Company, and has chaired sections of the National Medical Association and has also lectured internationally. It gives us great pleasure to welcome Dr. Nedra Dodds to the show. Dr. Dodds, how are you today?
Good afternoon. How are you doing, Sparkplug?
Fantastic, and I'm trying to get better.
Good, good, good. That's one way to stay young.
All right. Let's get right into it. You were born in Jackson, Tennessee.
Yes, I was.
What is Jackson famous for?
Well, mostly most areas in West Tennessee, country music and barbecue. I actually moved from there at about the age of 2, so I don't keep up much with my homegrown town, but I call Chattanooga, Tennessee, actually my real home.
Well, Dr. Dodds, you are an only child.
Yes, sir.
What was the best part of growing up as an only child?
I didn't have to share Christmas presents. The best part, actually, was the amount of attention that was given to me, but at the same time, the amount of expectations that was also given to me.
Well, you were raised by your mother.
Yes, sir.
What kind of work did she do?
My mother, actually, now she's a retired teacher. She actually has her interest in special education, but she actually was a health teacher and a physical education teacher.
Well, you wrote that your mother inspired you early in life.
Uh-huh.
She obtained her master's degree when you were 5 years old.
Yeah.
At what age did you learn that education was very important?
I can probably say as long as I can remember comprehending conversation amongst the adults in my household. It was never an assumption that I would have higher education. It was always the norm when we spoke about when you get out of high school and when you get out of college. So I always knew it. In fact, as I got older, I found that to be not the norm in other households and realized that I was somewhat of the exception to the rule. So I've always known it as if I know my own name.
Well, you were a good singer as a child. Do you still sing today?
I sing for the benefit of my children and my family, occasional holidays and maybe an occasional wedding, a little small function. But I don't do it as much as I used to.
Well, I read that your favorite subjects in school were biology and literature and movie analysis. Tell me more about being a movie critic.
Well, actually, the subject was more on how movies are made, the symbolism behind it, why certain things in the script, how it manifests onto the screen. And when you are a critic, more so you're looking at the storyline, but when you're looking at why a movie was made a certain way, you see that the colors that were chosen to express emotion and the music actually that plays in the background helps to facilitate the storyline. So being a very artistic person, I found that to be very fascinating, and I always think back of that when I just look at life itself, the symbolism behind everything.
Well, that really sounds like a private school.
Yeah.
And you wrote that you attended private school from K to 12.
Yes, sir.
In what way do you believe that private school benefited you?
I think the main thing is obviously the expectation that was given to its students. The structure of the school was very no-nonsense. Everybody was expected to excel, but also there was no gray area when it came to discipline. So you knew what was right and you knew what was wrong, and then if there was any wrong that was done by the students, you knew that there were going to be consequences. So I think the main thing is just that as I say, we walked that fine line, not that I was a bad child by any means because of the household that I came from and obviously being a child of an educator, but knowing that that school was there to provide an education first and foremost, and that was not a playground for folly. So it did somewhat affect my fashion sense because I wore plaid all of that time, so I don't wear that very much these days.
Well, in the eighth grade, you made all-city in volleyball.
Yes.
Are you a fan of beach volleyball today, and do you still play?
Well, let's see. I never played beach volleyball, and I actually have watched it, and I think it still is a great sport. And no, I don't play that anymore, but I definitely support the athleticism of any setting, so be it elementary school, high school, or college. I definitely think that sports are a great adjunct as an outlet for students, and also, again, it contributes to the structure that children can have in their lives.
Well, in high school, you were involved in the Color Guard. What was that experience like for you?
It gave me the opportunity to combine lots of things that I liked, such as dancing, and obviously it is actually considered a sport, and creativity, but I think the main thing that came out of it was the ability to compete. When you are placed in a position of competition, you're not only competing with as a group, but obviously you're kind of competing as an individual. So anything that kind of drives you to push yourself a little bit further is actually kind of a good thing, because you should never want to just be happy with the here and the now. We should always want to do more and have more. So it was definitely a good experience going through the judging process. I actually went on and did, I think, 8 pageants after the course of that, too, so it somewhat prepared me for that.
You were very fortunate because you wrote that all of your teachers believed in you. But there was a Mrs. Brown in the seventh grade that inspired you to become a doctor. How did she do it?
She was my seventh grade science teacher, and I just loved every single thing that she said and did, and I went over and beyond with my projects, and she just kind of came to me and she said, "You really like this?" And I was like, "I really do." And she said, "You know what, you should be a doctor." And believe it or not, that was the day I made up my mind and didn't change it since, so I know that's rather odd, but in seventh grade, I was like, wow, I like this science thing, and I like people. It's a good fit. And so she was on to something.
Well, after high school graduation, you went to the University of Maryland, and you received your medical degree from Meharry College, Meharry Medical College. Who was the first person to congratulate you after you received your medical degree?
Well, obviously, my fellow classmates were the first ones because of the close proximity, because it's definitely a hard road to go through professional school, and you definitely bond with people. So we congratulated each other first and foremost. And then if I recall, I want to say it was my mother was the first non-classmate to actually come up to me.
Well, I read that a major turning point in your life came when you got your medical degree and you began to realize the magnitude of the responsibility handed to you. Elaborate on this for us a little bit, please.
Well, you know, it's one thing when you have that piece of paper, but it's another thing to actually have the concept and the true meaning of what it means to be a doctor. We take an oath, and the reason why we take an oath is because you are handed a global responsibility. And as a young physician, when you introduce yourself as a doctor, being in a mall, I think it was kind of one of the first times it really hit me, people have certain expectations of you, and they start telling you their problems, and they're expecting you to be that provider of a source of a solution. And you don't always know the answer, you know, especially early in your career. And you're just like, oh, wow, people really expect me to know what's going on. And you just really realize that this is serious. And so I think it was very significant, because obviously some people say you look too young to be a doctor, but it's significant, especially as I traveled and I did missionary work, that I have been handed a gift. And it is important that this gift from God to basically pass on his doings. It's not so much my doing, but it's his doing to be able to do good is a great gift, and you must cherish that.
You told me yesterday that one of the lowest moments in your life was when your grandmother was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. Did she teach you anything that you still live by today?
She actually taught me about being your own person. I think as a child, I wasn't quite sure what she meant by that. As an entrepreneur herself, it was about knowing yourself, knowing what you want, and being able to grow that as an individual, spreading that with your family, and obviously helping that to add to the success of your business. So it was a little sad that as I became older to be able to have more conversations with her, we were not in a position for her to facilitate the other end of the conversation.
Well, you wrote that the happiest moment in your life was becoming a mother. What does motherhood mean to you?
Well, I think it's also the extension of what my grandmother was trying to teach me. You've been given a major responsibility of impacting someone's life. And obviously there are definitely good times, and then there are some bad times that you can expect as being a mother. But motherhood just means that I now have the opportunity to rewrite the script. I now have all those things as a child that you wanted to plan to do that you couldn't do for yourself, that you say, okay, this is what I want my child to experience. And, you know, and part of that is shielding them from the bad things that happen in the world, but also at the same time, exposing them to absolutely everything that's good and fabulous about the environment that we live in and sharing those relationships with family and friends.
Well, Dr. Dobbs, before we take our break, what drives you to get up in the morning and do it all over again?
Actually, just being able to help people and make a difference. I genuinely like and love what I do, so therefore it makes it so much easier for the next day to come.
Well, we need to take a break right now, but we'll be right back with more People You Need to Know on radio.
Today's program is sponsored by Kissable, the new health and taste sensation in toothpaste developed by Dr. Danielle Wilson, president of Premier Dental in Dunwoody. For more information about Kissable, log on to bekissable.com. That's bekissable.com. And if you need a smile makeover, call Dr. Wilson today, 770-642-4711.
Listen to People You Need to Know with your host, Spark Plug, Saturdays from 1 to 2 p.m. on WGUN 1010 AM.
People you need to know. It's time for People You Need to Know. It's time for People You Need to Know on the radio. People You Need to Know. It's time for People You Need to Know. It's time for People You Need to Know.
Welcome back to People You Need to Know on Radio. I'm your host, Spark Plug, and I'm speaking with Dr. Nedra Dodds with Opulence Aesthetic Medicine. Dr. Dodds, if you weren't a doctor, what would you be?
I have to say a Broadway dancer.
Now, that's unexpected. Why?
Well, actually, I studied dance for 17 years, and I was voted Miss Most Talented out of my high school class because I sang and danced and played an instrument. And I generally love the theater. I love the arts. I love acting. I love being able to be a different person every time that you put on a different show. So that would be my second career choice. So it's not too late.
All right. Well, what do you wish you had known 20 years ago?
Oh, yeah, 20 years ago, I wish that I really knew how to invest money a little bit better. I think part of the African-American community, when we talk about money managing and about savings, what my parents taught me was what they knew was you save a little bit to the side and you do very conservative things with it. But obviously we know there's other ways to make your money work for you and make the money grow. And so I just wish I knew how to be a little bit more savvy with funds. Obviously that was one of the things that I would pass on to my children.
What one word best describes you?
Dynamic.
I can believe that. How do you stay motivated?
Actually, by learning new things. I'm never satisfied with the here and the now, and it may not all necessarily be career-related. I'm actually in the process of learning ballroom dancing again, so it's always just introducing new things into my life.
What do you wish more people knew about you?
I have a very humorous side, so I've actually been told that I should probably write a book because I actually have a very funny way of viewing certain things and retelling stories, so I can somewhat be silly.
You wrote that you believe that the most overlooked secret to success is absolutely loving what you do. Why do you think most people overlook this?
I don't really think it's overlooked by choice. I feel that true success is more of a blessing. God's benefits are given to people who are deserving, and grace is also given to people who are undeserving. And so I think when you're given the opportunity to pursue something that you genuinely like and love, and then you're fortunate enough make money out of it, then that's actually what success is. And a lot of people just don't have that ability to continue in any particular path that they genuinely love.
Well, one of the rules you live by is make decisions during the day that will allow you to sleep at night. How long have you been living by this rule?
Oh, I can say probably as long as I remember. I think being taught about being genuine and good to people, you know, the honesty that must come about in any form of fashion is the foremost thing that I go by. And so if you be good and honest, then you should have no problems with your conscience.
What person living today do you admire the most and why?
I would have to say Oprah Winfrey. She has chosen to leave a legacy. And I think the fact that she has done this in the realm of education is so outstanding when it could have been in the form of more art or even just another business. But I think the fact that she has chosen to leave a legacy of education so that people can empower themselves is one of the most fabulous things that I can think that anyone can do, because it is more about teaching people to fish than giving them a fish. I would have to say her.
Who was your role model growing up?
My grandmother, the one with Alzheimer's. She was an entrepreneur. She was the first black female in the city of Chattanooga to have her own business.
What kind of business did she have?
She actually was a cosmetologist, but not letting that initial training hold her down. She basically went on to become somewhat of a politician and a history maker. She became the national president of Church Women United. She has given college commencement addresses, and she actually was one of the 50 Americans to go over to Iran in the 80s during the Iran hostage crisis, which is obviously still very relevant to us right now with the war. And she was the person who represented the state of Tennessee, and obviously there were a lot of applicants that they could have chosen. But I think the fact that she did not let her job title hold her down, that she went on to still educate and empower herself and have such a significant impact has been one of the things that I have always looked up to.
What advice would you give young girls who want to make something of themselves?
Well, the first thing is obviously continue on with your education, because that is the key. The second thing is to have a true sense of self, meaning what do you as an individual want, not what a boyfriend or a spouse or something may want for you. Is what do you as an individual want? And then the other thing is be true to yourself. You can only be happy and successful amongst a group if you are happy and successful as an individual. And I think that, you know, when choices are made wisely, regardless of some, you know, people's situation, most people can attain their goals. And not to say not to keep your goals lowered, but obviously to, you know, reach a little bit higher, you know, like that mantra of, you know, shoot for the moon, and even if you miss, you're still amongst the stars. It's very true. You should always still shoot for beyond for what you think that you can do.
How important is having a high self-regard when it comes to success?
It's very important. If you don't believe in yourself, then you really can't expect anybody else to believe in you. And so that, not to say to the point of being conceited, but you must actually be your own cheerleader first and foremost. And if, you know, if you get 10 no's, and get, you, then hopefully an 11th yes will come.
What are some of your hobbies, Dr. Dodds?
Like I said, I like dancing, and I actually like doing a little decorating here and there. So anything that kind of involves being creative, I generally enjoy. And that's kind of what my work is about, too, is about being creative.
When was the last time you really had some fun, and what did you do?
Having a little party with friends and actually just playing charades sounds very simple, but to see people out of their element and the creativity of others, so to speak, in trying to express themselves without the use of words was actually very, very amusing. So,
how long have you been in the aesthetic medicine business?
I've been in this business of about 4 years now.
So what exactly do you do?
I basically do some cosmetic surgery, such as liposuction and the infamous Brazilian butt lift. We also here at the practice, we do tummy tucks and some facial surgeries, skin treatments, anti-aging medicine, weight management. Basically, anything that kind of involves improving the outer self, not so much changing, but improving the outer self, but at the same time, we can offer some enhancements for the inner self with hormone replacement, but also we have a life coach here at the practice, too, because I think it is important to kind of pull everything together. The mind and the soul always go together with the body.
Well, that leads me to my next question. Where do you believe true beauty lies?
I believe it truly lies inside, and that is one of the things I used to hear my mother say about ugly to the bone. You know, part of that was not so much about how someone looks, but it's their behavior and their attitude and their mindset. We see lots of very beautiful people in the news that have really bad demeanors that makes them not so attractive after a while. So I think it is the view of the self, how you view yourself can reflect on the outside, and it totally changes how people, you know, look at you. So it definitely starts from within.
How did you get into the anti-aging business?
Being an anti-aging type of patient, obviously we cannot stop the aging process. So in getting older and having children and knowing you want to be as young, as vigorous as you can for our young kids, my looks, obviously, because I did have a career at one point in time where my looks were based on my success in that field. So obviously want to keep those up. And then, but at the same time, I, you know, had to remember that I am a physician, and I wanted to still bring an element of medicine and being able to help people and benefit them. So, you know, it was selfish in the beginning because it's like, well, what can I investigate for myself? But at the same time, it piqued such an interest that I'm just like, oh, I want to be able to make a little bit of a difference in how the industry is approached.
Well, tell us a little bit about that career. You were a model.
Yes, and I can't remember, maybe about 10 or 11, started doing department store work. And I actually modeled throughout college and through medical school and did commercials and print and magazines and catalogs and all the things that they say, okay, well, you're looking for this person, okay, you fit the mold and that's what you do. But at the same time, chose to still stay with my career of science and follow my path of helping people.
Why do you think we as Americans fear aging so much?
I think it's because of what aging, or we should say old, has represented throughout the years. We always have always looked at it as being the end. So we have nursing homes that were built because you were old, and we had respite places that were built. And if you see, there's a trend of they're not nursing homes. We have a trend of growth of retirement communities. You know, we have a trend of adult living communities. So we know in here in the United States that, yes, we get older, but we're still living, and we can still be vibrant, and we can still be healthy. And this has been a concept that has been very prevalent in Europe for years, that is, just because you hit a certain age doesn't mean that life stops. And I think that now that obviously healthcare is better, so people are living older, they're feeling better. But as for my clients that I see, I have patients that are in their 70s still getting cosmetic procedures. They want their outside to reflect their inside. So they're like, hey, I'm 78, only really feel 58. So, you know, what can we improve to somewhat meet somewhere in the middle, as I tell them? So I think that's the biggest thing, that we know that age really, and I tell patients all the time, age really just means wisdom. It has nothing to do with how you look.
Well, speaking of your clients, who are your ideal clients?
My ideal client is never a particular age. My ideal client is someone who is educated in somewhat of the industry, who understands that we don't create miracles overnight, who's willing to go through the process, because I have somewhat of a different approach when I talk to my patients about let's be patient and not be necessarily aggressive about certain things, and someone with a very good sense of self, because we don't look for outward corrections for inner problems, and with just a great attitude. So I've been fortunate that I've had about 99% of those people.
Okay. Well, what's the best advice you've ever been given?
I've had so much, and I've been so fortunate to have come across so many people who have really been willing to share advice. But I think probably one of us is in regards to a potential business decision that wasn't going to be the most positive, and, you know, someone just kind of gave me some heart-to-heart about it, and they were right on the money with it.
And what was it?
Oh, about not pursuing a potential line of business relationship. So,
okay.
Yes.
Well, where do you go to relax and unwind?
Where do I go? Well, I like to travel, but obviously I can't do it as much because of the little ones, my little ones these days. But I like spas. I like actually the being removed from the environment of telephones and radio and television, and I like the soothing music and the sound of running water. So I like going to a nice spa. Obviously, I like destination spas, but the closest destination spa would be Chateau Elan.
Okay. What makes you laugh?
Watching my children dance. They're ages 2 and 4, and it is the most entertaining thing I have ever seen, to see them just come alive with music. And the little running joke in my household is that it's Michael and Janet in their younger years. So
well,
the accent that is.
Well, to wrap up, how would you like to be remembered?
I would like to be remembered as being a fair and caring individual who basically wanted to improve the quality of people's lives.
And finally, how can you be reached, Dr. Dodds?
Okay. The office number is 770-591-3429. Our website is www.aesthetics, and that's AESTHETICARTS, by Opulence, and that's all one word. Or you can always just email us at opulenceaac@yahoo.com.
Well, Dr. Nedra Dodds, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to People You Need to Know on radio. Until next time, always remember that you can add a spark to whatever you do. And for more information about our guest, log on to sparkplugpeople.com. Thanks for tuning in.
Today's program is sponsored by Kissable, the new health and taste sensation in toothpaste developed by Dr. Danielle Wilson, president of Premier Dental in Dunwoody. For more information about Kissable, log on to bekissable.com. That's bekissable.com. And if you need a smile makeover, call Dr. Wilson today, 770-642-4711.
Listen to People You Need to Know with your host, Spark Plug, Saturdays from 1 to 2 p.m. on WGUN 1010 AM.
People you need to know. It's time for people you need to know. It's time for people you need to know on the radio. People you need to know. It's time for people you need to know. It's time for people you need to know.